The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger, and as always, joined by Dylan. And Dylan, 2 days ago, I probably wouldn't have been able to talk like this because still, it's as we are recording this on Sunday, July 3rd, it is my fourth day of isolation because after more than 2 years, I caught COVID to the absolute worst timing because of that, I missed Schützenfest. I was really looking forward to that. And 2 days ago, I couldn't have done this show with you. I think I also told you in the DMs that we needed to wait a few more days. But so we can include DDT and Great as well. So worked out for the best, I guess.
You know, that kind of happens a lot where it feels like something will happen and we have to push something back, but then it yes. turns out that it was for the better at the end of it, because then something else will happen that we couldn't have talked about before. That kind of happened one of our recent episodes where we talked about, we had to put off talking about Cyber Fight Fest, but then it allowed us to be there right away on the All Japan show after. So sometimes it's crazy how that works out. I guess that's an interesting thing. But I do have to say, I hope you get well soon, Strick. You know, that's a very scary situation whenever you have any kind of illness, especially something like this, which is obviously highly publicized and pandemicized and all of that. I don't think that's a real word. But regardless. Yes, is that a real word?
I have no idea.
Well, we've established that I'm not a doctor. It is now. But for real, though, I do hope you get better. And I'm glad that we're able to take the time. I'm glad you're feeling up to talking about everything, kicking this thing's ass. And you're going to get, you know, and like I said, we definitely need you this month. It's a big month for wrestling in general, and especially in Japan. You know, it's one of those things where so much is going on. We're going to have a lot of fun stuff to talk about this month and in the near future in general as well, you know. And I feel like we've really been stepping our game up lately. You know, there was a lot going on. And then just on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, we had all kinds of stuff going on. Me and you actually did a show on Forbidden Door, up and down, every single match on the card. Lots of cool stuff there. So keep in mind, everybody, check out the Patreon. We had the 90s project go up. You know, everything going on there. It's going to be a lot of cool stuff. So everybody check that out. And thank you guys for listening, as always. I really appreciate it. Just a minor plug for myself, by the way, too. I want to shout these guys out. I was actually have a guest appearance coming up probably by the time this episode will air. And I specifically asked them when it would air. It would be Monday. And it was for the Must See Matches project. You can find them on Twitter. Mark Buckley and Kieran, these guys host it. I talked about a very special match, in my opinion, Daisuke Ikeda versus Yuki Ishikawa for Futen 2005. Hmm. And when they saw Futen Battle Arts, I was the one who came to mind, which really brings me back, because that was kind of my original, like way, way back when I started watching Japanese wrestling. That was kind of what I was probably most, and I use this term very loosely, known for, was being a Super Battle Arts fan back then. And it brought me back to those days, because we never, you know, obviously the company's been dead for a dozen years at this point, but still, it holds a special place in my heart. And that match in Futen, a great thing, very violent. There were interesting reactions because, you know, Kieran never had really seen this match or anything like that before, so he had a lot of interesting opinions, and I did my best to add info to it. So everybody check that out, and hopefully you enjoy that if you're interested in you know, I go into it on the show, but battle arts, everybody just kind of lumps shoot style all in together, but they're all different in their own ways.
Yes.
The style of battle arts is much different than a rings, so to speak, which I also love very much, for the record. But if you're interested in that kind of style, I would highly recommend it. Yuki Ishikawa, one of my absolute favorite wrestlers of all time.
One of the greatest matches that I ever saw live in 2019, actually, between the two, yep. Where they just beat the ever-living shit out of one another.
That's what their matches are known for.
Yes.
in most of them. Some of the early battle arts matches, you know, Ishikawa to me is more of an all-around wrestler. Ikeda is an amazing striker and character as well. Lots of charisma in that match and all of them. So they go together like peanut butter and chocolate, and they have many, many great matches over the years. All the way to, again, like just like you said, more recent times, you were there to see them live. And
it's a special thing when you see that live, when you see live how they just better each other. Wow. Yes. It was incredible.
Absolutely. And that's a match that you could always go back to. Any of them, not just that one match. Any era, any version of that match is always a lot of fun to watch. You know, it's one of those things where battle arts and that style still has a little bit of impact nowadays, because you have a few guys that started there that obviously still wrestle now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something I think about a lot when it comes to my favorites.
And you have guys that still, like, do the style. You have, you know, Tanaka, for example, in Great.
He's a battle arts original, yeah.
Yeah, then you have others that, I think, yeah, Hitamaru Sasaki also started, I don't know if he started in battle arts, maybe he did. I'm not sure right now, but definitely he's also one of these guys that does the style, and he still does it to this day. He even started his own brand within Kyushu Pro Wrestling, the Hitamaru style, and that is still going on. Let me check where
maybe
he
that's
actually started.
The original U style, maybe, if he named it that.
Yeah, in U style. He's started actually in U style, right? Yeah,
was Tamura's spinoff after Rings ended. Right. Which is a wonderful promotion, for the record. It's very short-lived, but a great promotion. And he definitely carries that spirit there. Tamura had a lot of great wrestlers, too. Like someone like Hijikata started in battle arts. You know, Muninori Sawa, I know everybody.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. Futon Battle 6 on July 16, 2007. Kyosuke Sasaki, Hitamaru Sasaki's former gimmick name, beat Muninori Sawa on that show.
Yeah, and there's someone else that I think we're about to talk about that also has a history in battle arts and has made it quite a spectacular return, in my opinion. But he definitely, you know, obviously we haven't seen his match, but as long as I've always seen him, he's carried battle arts style spirit in all of his matches, and I have no doubt that that will continue.
I have zero doubt as well. Yes, but harkening back to what you said earlier on the show, Dylan. About Monday, when we did our review of AEW, quickly want to go back to my COVID case here, because it's funny. On Monday, we did a show. It was 2 hours, basically, about Forbidden Door. And I felt fine during the show, but I was really, really tired, unusually tired after doing the show, because we usually like go 2 hours when we talk, sometimes even longer. But I was really tired after that, went to bed. And on Tuesday, I did the Cage Cast with Flosh and our friend Funny. And I didn't realize it on the show, but I listened back to the show a few days ago. And after each statement that I did, you can hear that I have this second where I need to breathe. And you can really hear it on the recording. So I'm really sure that I already had it on Tuesday, but I didn't really notice, because I did the show 2 hours, then went out for a drink with friends. I did a trip with my bike for 12 kilometers that day. So I don't know. I probably had it already, but I didn't really feel it that day. So that's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, just like I was telling you, this is something that it affects. We're all human beings, you know. Things will affect different people differently, and nobody knows for sure why that is, or if they do, I don't. to say the least. But I do hope that you get better, like I said. And it seems like, you know, now we've got the time to do it. That wasn't even that long ago; just a few days ago, we had that recording. Now we're back again, and it feels great to be doing this again. And hopefully, maybe even doing this show will raise your spirits. And that's happened to me quite a few times over the years.
This actually wasn't a planned episode, because this weekend I wouldn't have been able to do anything originally, but now here we are. And it was really tough mentally for me last couple of days. I was really, really, really having a tough time because I couldn't go out and I knew all my friends were going out. So that was really hard. But it gave me the time to sit down and watch a lot that I wouldn't have watched before our half-year awards, a show that's coming up next. And also what really helped me mentally is just looking at these inspiring stories that we've seen over this weekend, specifically over this weekend in pro wrestling, because sometimes, and I said it in a tweet just today about Higuchi, sometimes pro wrestling is just so incredibly rewarding when you see a story like this unfold with Higuchi finally winning the KOD title, or like the first topic that I want to talk about with you, Dylan, like Fujita Jr. Hayato coming back from spinal cord cancer. That is once again something that just sounds so horrific to me. And to think that he even made a comeback from this incredible disease is, it's just mind-boggling in and of it all. And then he came back to wrestle this 30-minute match with Musashi. And also, of course, credit to Musashi. We haven't seen the match, as you said. It only airs 10 days after this recording. So I got to give it to Musashi for being there for Fujita and going the distance of 30 minutes with Fujita in his first match in 2 years. In 2017, he was in the Tenkaichi Junior Tournament for 0-1, and he had, four matches in that tournament. The last one was against Shinjiro Otani, another story, another coincidence here, that he had his last match before his long-term absence from the ring against Otani. He tore his LCL completely off, ruptured in that match, and he had to take a long break. And after that, after he already was ready to come back, it became public that he had spinal cord cancer then. And we saw pictures over the last couple of years of Jinsei Shinsaki helping him out in a wheelchair and stuff like that. And he had this one-off match against Kengo, one of his best friends in wrestling, in 2019, where it was basically just about his spirit and him wanting to go back into the ring. He wasn't really cleared to go back fully, but they cleared him for this one match. And there was one prior show where we talked about this case, this medical case of Fujita. He had surgery where they removed a lot of the aggressive cancer, of the aggressive part of it in his body, to the part that he is still able to move and to the part that he's still able to wrestle. And that is what was most important to him. And you could see it on the photos, and you could see it on the video, the interview that Weekly Pro uploaded after this Michinoku Pro show in Kurken Hall on July 1st. He was completely overwhelmed with a lot of feelings, and he was just crying a lot, sobbing while he was talking. So this is an incredible, incredible story. And Dylan, before I want to give it to you, I want to address the name of this show, drawing 1,052 fans, so pretty successful for that matter. And the name of the show was the Michinoku Pro Wrestling 2022 Tokyo Convention Volume 1, Genko Ichi. And Genko Ichi basically translates to acting up to one's words, or consistency between speech and action. And that couldn't be more appropriate to anyone but Fujita Jr. Hayato.
You know, it's interesting when you look at this situation. It's one of those things that I feel like I want to talk for an hour about, but it's so amazing to see. There's not a lot I can really add, that because when you know this situation, you know this story, and maybe you don't know all the ins and outs of the cancer, but you know it's cancer, and then you know it's spinal cancer, just a devastating thing. To see this man come back and win the world title of his home promotion against all odds, like you said, wrestle a 30-minute match. It's like, it's everything is just perfect how it is. If he had not won the title, if there had been you know, 1,000 fans or one fan. If we never see it or we see it and it's an amazing match, if it's the worst match ever, it doesn't matter. Him doing this is so amazing in and of itself that, you know, it gives me chills to even think about, for real. Because this is like, this is bigger than any kind of singular accomplishment or entity or a title or even wrestling.
And that's why it's really hard to talk about, because it's so unprecedented. And you can just say he came back from this fucking disease. End of the story.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Like, if you're sitting here and you know this, if anybody's sitting in my shoes or your shoes, you read this, you hear this, you talk about it, and your reaction isn't to get emotional, isn't to have goosebumps, isn't to think, oh my God, this is one of the most amazing things. I said it. This is one of the greatest and most inspirational things, not just in wrestling, but in life, that I've seen in all year. And to me, if you're not feeling that, what are we doing here? If you don't think that, like, what are you doing? You have to, because... Again, I said it earlier, we're all human beings, and this guy has pushed the limits of what anybody could do. And when you think about his own personal story, again, this is a guy I talked about him earlier. He's, you know, he had a battle arts history. He came up from the deep indies in Michinoku Pro, you know, to New Japan at one point in the Super J Cup, like 2009 version. He was doing all kinds of stuff. Kind of became this guy. I think everybody knew of him because he's such a great wrestler, and those who have seen him will swear by his talent, which he has a lot of, and he definitely did before his unfortunate illness. But he never really got that spotlight when the big time started, you know, in Japanese wrestling, when it really migrated over to the English-speaking world, because he was in Michinoku Pro, which doesn't always air that much. So now we're getting a chance to see him on his return, and his story has been so much that in his personal life, his mentor, Kid Yamamoto, passed away from cancer. And he had to deal with that loss. And look at this. And he came back from this. And I was thinking about that when I first read this and I saw the pictures and all that. I was thinking, Kid has to be smiling right now about this. Like, looking down and just thinking, so proud of what Junior's doing right now. And it's just an unbelievable story. One of my favorite wrestlers, for sure. Again, this was a guy that was a big deal. I think one of my very first matches I watched in Japanese wrestling, I always mention this, the very first one I watched was Kenta and Marufuji. But then I started to look for other promotions and stuff. And one of the first ones I watched was him versus Yoshitsune back then, which is like Sugi-san now. But like back then, that was his gimmick. And they had an incredible match, one of the best indie matches, you know, of the year in Japan.
December 12, 2008, actually.
Yeah, 2008. Then the year later, he had the match with Kanemoto, which is also one of the greatest matches of that year.
Rating of 8.23 is the one from December 2009, yeah. And then there's another one in 2011 that has a rating of 8.48.
I know Alan Forel, if he's listening, he will agree with me that that match is underrated on Cage Match, because I know that he loves that match, and I love that match.
Which
too.
Which
one? Probably both of them, but particularly the Super J Cup one, like that, which I think is 2009.
Yeah.
So like to me, that was an amazing match. But he had a lot of major matches. Then he had a great feud with Kenno. I know everybody knows him now. Listening, that was one of my favorite feuds and what really got me into Kenno at first, and he was a big part of that. And then, you know, like I said, things transpired, and unfortunately, he left us for a while, but he fought back. And the whole time he was gone, he was always pushing. You mentioned that match in 2019. He was always pushing to try and make appearances, even when he was at his dirt poorest, and God only knows how this man was feeling and the terrible circumstances that he went through. But he kept his passion and his love for wrestling and his desire to come back always in his mind and his heart and his soul. And that's what led us here today. And what a triumphant return to win the title. It's a storybook ending. I feel like you could honestly make a movie about this whole situation.
Really, yes.
And, you know, like I said, it's an amazing thing. And I think it's almost unanimous that this is like an amazing thing to everybody, because it just is. It's a human story, you know?
And I'm secretly hoping that I don't want to say that there needs to be footage of him really suffering. Like you said, he probably really felt awful during a lot of that time, but knowing that he is such a devoted mind to pro wrestling, I'm really hoping that there is some kind of footage of his way back, of his return, of his way getting back into training, of his first steps back into the ring. I really hope there is some kind of footage, because remember a couple of years ago we also got this great Sasuke documentary. So I hope that there is some kind of footage about that. And I want to add one more match to the list that you mentioned. This is one of my favorite Michinoku Pro matches of the modern era, from June 16, 2016. Fujita Hayato versus Manji Maru, where I think it was when... Yes, Manji Maru was champion back then, and he defeated Fujita Hayato. That was one of the moments where Manji Maru broke out from being just a tag team partner to Fujita to becoming his own wrestler in the Michinoku Pro universe, at least. Great match back then. And you mentioned Kit Yamamoto. Of course, Fujita, here in this match against Musashi, he used the key ID to win the match, his guillotine front choke that is directly derived from Kit Yamamoto's technique of choking out his opponents. So there are... You can see how deep the connection is between the two.
Yeah, and he uses his theme song too.
Like, yes.
Absolutely.
And then something that struck me as well is that in the history, Dylan, of the Tohoku Junior Heavyweight Championship that goes back to 2002, the first four champions, Dick Togo, Atlantis, Great Sasuke, and Taka Michinoku. What a list. The history of this championship goes back to 2002, as I said, and all of these champions that I mentioned, they won the championship in either in Miyagi or in Iwate, Hokkaido, the northern region of Japan. And there is only three title changes in the history of this championship that happened in Tokyo. December 12, 2008, Fujita Hayato defeated Yoshitsune. June 3, 2012, Fujita Hayato defeated Kenno. And now, July 1st, 2022, Fujita Hayato defeated Musashi. So him, Fujita, he has a special connection to Tokyo, it seems. He won all of his championships in Tokyo, and he's the only one in the history of the championship to do it there.
And, you know, another title reign started, now against all odds, and I'm just so happy to see this one come to pass and see what he's going to do next. You know, by all intents and purposes, like you said, we haven't seen the match yet, so we don't know, but for all intents and purposes, hopefully he can go on a nice run and do a lot of good things.
I can tell you what he's doing next, actually. We of course, have to wait for the match to air, but then on July 16, there is this mini tour that they do every summer, and he is scheduled for the main event on that show in Yahaba, the holy place of Michinoku Pro Wrestling, where actually most of these title changes take place. It is the Bad Boy faction, Fujita, Junior Hayato, Ken 45, and Manji Maru, taking on Musashi, Koji Kawamura, and Katsuki Hashimoto, who recently challenged Musashi for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. And Dylan, I would love to see a K-Hash versus Fujita Hayato match.
It's just going to depend on what is able to air. You know, at the end of the day, we don't have the ins and outs of that. But anything he does, I will be happy to see. And obviously, I'm a big fan of K-Hash as well, so I would love to see that match too. But just anything he does, all eyes will be upon it, because it's just an amazing story. Like I said, more than anything in wrestling. Like I said, we could tune into that. It could be the worst match ever. He's nothing like he used to be. Who cares? Like this is so unbelievable that it's just a spectacular thing, and it's something we can all be happy about. And I'm sure it won't be that, because he was a hell of a wrestler, to be honest with you. Never mind all of this stuff, you know, just talent-wise. I mean, you know, you see him, you look at him, and you're just thinking, it's this really small guy, but he's such a, like, just energetic, like, spunky, feisty bastard who hits you so hard that he just defies everything. That's such a unique style. He's another one of these guys that I feel like is a total package in the ring, and you know, I don't really have any expectations for his wrestling, but in my heart, I do, because I know how talented he was. But like I said, to me, whatever he does, I'm going to watch it no matter what. I'm just interested to see where he goes, because this is an unbelievable story, more than any kind of matches that they can have. And, you know, Impro, it's one of those things where it's, you mentioned it earlier, like the whole gimmick of Michinoku Pro pretty much is that it's you know, northern wrestling in Japan. It's up north, not in Tokyo or the mainstream, so to speak. They're a regional promotion. So it remains to be seen how much this will make an impact, especially among maybe foreign viewers. But anything we can see is definitely a blessing. So I can't wait to see that.
Yes, and for Michinoku Pro, this was a very successful day in Tokyo, drawing over 1,000 fans. And there were other companies in Tokyo as well on that same day. So July 1st, really a successful day for wrestling in Tokyo. 01 ran their first day of the Fire Festival, where they drew 213 fans to Shinkiba First Ring, with Masato Tanaka versus Yoshiki Nomura going to a 30-minute time limit draw in the main event. Wave also ran that same day in Shinjuku Face, drawing 150 fans. And then there was the other company that we are going to talk about here next up, Dylan. It was Great Version 3, the first anniversary show. It was live on New Japan World, not as it states on Perlove on YouTube. I just copy-pasted what they always do. In Tokyo Dome City Hall, they drew a crowd of 1,250 fans. I think it looked like a bigger crowd, but they took a sizable amount of the building for their incredible entrance ramps. So I guess that could have been sold as well. But nonetheless, 1,250 fans is a good draw for Great. And they once again have had an incredible presentation at the beginning of the show, with the entire roster coming out, and Teok took the mic. He said, on this day, no one is a supporting act. Everybody is a main player, is basically what the words he said translated to. And then it was interesting to me that T-Hawk took the mic and not Linderman, as he's the champion. But of course, after the main event, he got to talk on the mic and to call out some of the guys that he lost to in the Super Junior tournament. And so overall, I guess it's a great success for Great to have run the show. What was your general feeling about this show after it ended?
For me, I think that, you know, obviously this is a company that I've really enjoyed over the year. For the most part, they've been pretty straightforward with everything, and you've got some cool moments, cool surprises, new factions rising up, things like that. Even on this show, we had a bit of a surprise announcement that I'm sure we'll get to. And obviously, they ended the show with two UWF-style matches, which is something I always enjoy seeing. It's something I don't think they utilize enough, personally, is their UWF division. Mm-hmm. And here we ended it with two UWF matches, so I do think that's a step in the right direction, surely. You know, the show itself, I thought, hey, this was a good show. Like you said, a success to run things. You know, I did leave with some questions that we'll get into. So it was mostly good, but I did have some reservations about a couple of things. But it mostly good. Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. So I would generally say this is a show that in the end is a 7 out of 10 show.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. Some of the stuff on the show was really good. But especially like the middle portion of the show, didn't really like. Maybe we can address it like right now, because the match number 4 and match number 5, that's the portion of the show that I didn't like. First, it was Shima and Gamma. Of course, they were a very well-known tag team in Dragon Gate by the name of Osaka 06. Basically just naming when they came together. Two Osaka natives came together in 2006 in Dragon Gate. They took on Ryuichi Kawakami and Check Shimatani from Bulk Orchestra. And, of course, the Bulk Orchestra team had to lose because there was Shima in the match and Gamma on his retirement road. So the outcome of this match was a foregone conclusion, which is why I checked out of most of the action in the match. I watched it, yes, but didn't really feel anything about it. So I didn't really like that, especially not the booking with Shimatani and Kawakami, because they really shouldn't be on the losing effort on a big show like this, two of the greatest parts of Great this year. And then the other one, of course, was the Strong Hearts versus House of Torture match, which really felt like a mid-card New Japan match. And there's so many mid-card New Japan matches that I don't need this to be put in other promotions. That is not like something that New Japan should be proud of and should be bringing to other places. And the end of it, of course, when T-Hawk was the one that got pinned. Not like Issei Onitsuka. No. Gotta be T-Hawk. Gotta be the biggest star on the Strong Arts team that gets pinned by the junior heavyweight in House of Torture.
Yes, and that was an exasperated sigh at the end, and I think that sums it up pretty well, to be honest with you about all of this. That's what those two matches were like, a big exasperated sigh, I would say, going in there. Because of the reasons you said, it's like, you know, Bulk Orchestra has been really the main focus, pretty much, of this promotion, it feels like, you know, over the years. Because you obviously have Strong Hearts as your big stars and stuff, but they've really put a lot into Bulk Orchestra. And to see it go like this, where you have guys like, you know, Shimatani, Kawakami, people who have had really big performances over the year, just to be put this really non-important mid-card match to put the focus on Gamma, you know, it's like, you know, and Shima, obviously, but, you know, it's like, that's not that great. It was a fine match. I definitely think it was better than the other match, the House of Torture match. I did not have much love for that. I will say, like, when you see House of Torture come out, I thought that they felt like, especially on this show, as New Japan guys, they did feel like stars. They carried themselves pretty well. It's just, unfortunately, the wrestling had to happen afterwards, and that's where things kind of crumbled from it. But I think there was a way to actually make that work, just not how they did it. How they did it definitely did not work for me. But, yeah, these two portions of the show, or these two matches, were definitely the down point of the show.
And it also just doesn't fit great at all. No. I mean, not even their heel stable Bulk Orchestra goes to the levels of heel play, heel shenanigans that House of Torture goes to. So it just felt completely out of place for this company.
Yeah, I think if they had done some kind of gimmick match like you did what we saw with the Lumberjack
strap
match, like that they could have worked in that role more so than Strong Hearts match.
Right. Yeah, so there was not the best part of the show, but it actually started out pretty cool with Kaz Hayashi returning. And then on our show on Monday, when we talked about Forbidden Door, we talked about Sting and how long I've been watching Sting. And this year struck me with Kaz Hayashi. I've been a wrestling fan since 1998, and Kaz Hayashi has always been there. Sting, I stopped watching for some parts in the late 2000s in TNA, and for some years he wasn't even active, so I couldn't follow his career. But Kaz Hayashi, he has been active ever since I have been a pro wrestling fan. When I watched WCW, he was there. When I transitioned over to Japanese pro wrestling, he came back to All Japan in 2002, was there for a long time, was in Wrestle 1 then, now here in Great. So Kaz Hayashi is one of the staples of my wrestling fandom.
Yes, and I think you've told me personally as well that you really only know him as Glacier 2.
Yes.
It really is what he's most known for.
Famous run.
Yeah, exactly. That was really his biggest run. Hayashi, yeah, really talented guy, too. He's a guy that, like, I think pretty much everyone respects and knows is good, but he's kind of an under-the-radar guy in some ways, because he's never on that list of legacy juniors. You know, even compared to his longtime partner, Kondo, in Team 246, I think people resonate with him more than Hayashi, but if you look at his run, I mean, this is a rock-solid, hell of a career, honestly, that he's had as a junior heavyweight in Japan across all of those promotions, and now in, you know, he's obviously at an older stage now, but really pretty much always unselfish, still doing some good work, and always a treat to watch, you know, and especially a circumstance like this. You know, the whole match, and you obviously had him coming in. You had Septimo Dragon from Mexico come in, a very random person to bring in, but they did a pretty good job. You know, like, he did a lot of flying stuff. Him, I was really impressed when, you know, Asoma brought the 450 Splash, too, like his Pegaso gimmick in Wrestle 1 here. That was really good, I thought. But yeah, like, that was a good opener.
I really liked this finish, because they also brought in they had this camera on top of the building, on the roof of the building, looking down onto the canvas, and they did the stereo 450s, and then Kaz Hayashi scored the finish with the final cut on Kazuma Sakamoto. So that was really good. Yeah.
as it should be, Kazma taking the pin.
Yes.
But that's another thing I think we should mention. You mentioned the camera work, and that's something I think great is one of the best at, especially among the smaller companies, like not the major league big bad companies. They have really good production values, and they go out of their way to do stuff. We mentioned before the stuff with the YouTube, with stuff, the Spotify playlist they put together now on New Japan World. They have really good production values up and down, and like I said, you can make people look like stars and do a lot of different stuff there. So that's something we have to mention too. They deserve some credit too for those people handling production.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was a good opener. Got the show going to a nice pace, and this pace continued with the next match. Atsuki Aoyagi from All Japan Pro Wrestling and Minoru Tanaka, they defeated the team of 60 Seconds, Jun Tonsho and Keiichi Sato in 8 minutes. So I really liked this match. I thought that Keiichi Sato played a good role in this match. Minoru Tanaka had his moments, but especially I liked the chemistry once again that was shown between Jun Tonsho and Atsuki Aoyagi. Jun Tonsho is one of those Wrestle One guys that also fly under the radar a lot because he's really, really small. He's a tiny guy, just 5'8". And with Atsuki Aoyagi together, I think the finishing stretch especially was very fiery with Atsuki Aoyagi, then rolling up with the Lama Strel cradle in a good undercard match.
Yeah, you know, this is the point of the card. We talked about the two matches maybe we didn't love that much, but for me, if you look at every other match on this card, I'd rate them about the same, same level. I think they were all very consistently good. And I think, like I said, this one, I think especially, by the end of it, I thought this might actually have been my favorite match on the show, believe it or not. I thought they had a really great chemistry with everyone. I thought Tanaka looked really good in there. And then you mentioned the chemistry between Aoyagi and Tonsho. I think that those guys are great. Tonsho has been a great signing for them because he's a guy that after Wrestle 1 ended, he was kind of MIA for a while. Everybody else did stuff, but he just never had any kind of chance anywhere. And now he's here, and he's awesome. And it's like, why didn't anybody make a run at this guy? How did Noah not bring him in? How did All Japan not bring him in? What was the deal? Was there heat? Did he not want to go? What happened? Because you see a talent like this, and he could be a top junior, I feel like, in all of the country. And Aoyagi is just ascending every day, always growing, always getting better. I think he's had a great run lately, both in his home company and whenever he's here, you know. He's really good. I always enjoy them, and I thought they had a really strong performance here.
I think when we did our Wrestle 1 draft 2 years ago, we said that some of the guys, unfortunately, will be lost in the shuffle. And for a long time, it seemed that he would be one of those guys. But really glad that he has now been picked up by Great and is getting at least some portion of work with the company, steady work, that is, not being on Vamos Star shows. Recently, I saw this Vamos Star show, Dylan, and it's the remainder of what is still there from Wrestle 1. And I mean, the main event was Andy Wu and Daimonji versus Takumi Baba and Tsukutaka Sato. And then there is a Tsushi versus Masada match on the show, Masayuki Kono against Hajime, Kuma Arashi against Sego Tachibana. I mean, those are all fine guys, good guys. But who is this supposed to appeal to?
You know, if you're a Wrestle 1 loyalist.
Yeah, exactly. It's a niche of a niche fandom.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. But yeah, they're clearly doing a very smaller indie there with no hope to challenge. Like something like this with Great, you feel like could really make some moves and make waves and be something. Vamos Star, that's like an indie, like totally, total indie, you know. But I'm glad Tancho's here, like,
yes,
because he deserves it.
So next up, we had the Great plus Yoshi Pro Wrestling's National Treasure, which is Nanae Takahashi, of course, against the Sendai Girls team of Manami, Mika Iwata, and Dashi Sako. Originally, Yurika Oka was planned for this spot. I'm not sure what happened to her. Is she injured? I don't know. They took on the team of Michiko Miyagi, Yukari Hosokawa, and, of course, as I said, Nanae Takahashi. Match mostly was centered around Michiko Miyagi and Mika Iwata having great exchanges in this match. They were peers back in the day when Miyagi was still in Sendai Girls, and they also had a feud last year over the Center Girls Tag Team Championship, where they traded the title back and forth. And so this, I thought this was one of the best women's matches that Great has put out in their history. They are mostly solid to good matches, but I thought this one had this specific story element that some of the matches lack that they have done in the past. So especially with the story between Miyagi and Iwata, I really liked this one.
Yeah, this was a good match. I thought Dash Chisako looked really good here. Just ton of energy she brought to the table here, and somebody that I just she's a veteran of the scene, and I love her to death. Just like Nanae, you know, that's one of the greatest Joshi performers to me, and to see her in Great is something I never expected would happen. I never expected what happened when it happened, but now that it's happened, I'm so into it, and I just think it's so cool. And she wasn't like a standout performer in this match. Like you said, it was more focused on Michiko, and also Hosokawa, too, I thought was really a big portion of the match, being the underdog person to set everybody up, and I thought she did a great job, showed a lot of good. You know, she's a very young performer. But every time you see her, it feels like she grows a little. And Miyagi, too, I think, has grown a little in terms of in-ring from where she was. Obviously, she had the more wild character in Sendai Girls and all of that. But here, she's just her normal self, just wrestling good. And I always enjoy seeing that. And I thought the Sendai Girls team did very good, too. Iwata, a great wrestler, obviously. I'm surprised Iwata took the fall instead of, that's a couple of things too, because it's like one of the descriptors of this show for me by the end of it was like finishes that kind of just happened, especially the last two matches. But I think this one you could argue too. But also, the people I wouldn't expect taking falls seem to lose here, and I think this was the start of that with Iwata.
Yes, and to the women's division of Great, they signed Maya Fukuda, who, I think she was signed to Actress Girls, and she said that she will be an exclusive UWF style wrestler. So I guess we are getting more UWF style matches, which is great. Wondering if Michiko Miyagi, for example, will be in the UWF rules. Why not? Hosokawa probably trains in it as well. So that opens up no option for the women's division.
Yeah, she was on some of like their very first mm-hmm. great shows. Her and Miyagi had a UWF match at one point.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Right, yeah.
So she, you know, obviously there was a lot going on with Actress Girls over the past years. But regardless, she's here now, and I think she'll be a great fit for it. I really liked what I've seen of her in the first couple of matches they had. Another one with Chihiro Hashimoto I looked up too. I remember that match. That was really good as well. You know, so very happy to see her. And I love seeing more people in this division. Obviously, it's very small at this point with only four performers. But, you know, they're growing the division and doing more things there. And with the UWF style, love it. I think I'm all for it. I love the idea of women also having their own UWF style division, and it feels like we're headed towards that taking a bigger priority, which is something I've definitely called for a while now, and it feels like they're about ready to take a step forward in that direction. That makes me very happy to see.
Agreed. And then we came to the main event of the G Pro Wrestling part of the show. Lindemann defended the championship, the G-Rex title, against the 60 Seconds leader, Tetsuya Itsuki, in 1927. And Dylan, right now, at a rating of 7.44 on Cage Match, there are 9.0 ratings, and then there is a 5.0 rating. Where do you fall with this match?
You can put me right in between those, I think, when it would be about where I have it. 7 out of 10 feels right to me. Like a good match that I was a little disappointed by, it, to be honest with you, because you see someone like Lindemann, obviously an amazing talent, but Izuchi is, I really like this guy. I think he's got everything it takes to be a big-time star. I mentioned it on one of our recent episodes. His matches with Iizuka, I thought, were just awesome in last year. And here, it was his big shot, and I was ready to go. And instead, just something about this didn't click for me. Maybe I started off, maybe it was me that did this, because, you know, I was just thinking, I was watching this, so I was like, man, why is this third from the top? Like, this should be one of the main matches. I feel like. And I get that they're going to be beholden to the New Japan guy, like, as yet another company will have to be that way. But I feel like, man, you couldn't even put him in the semi-main. I was really disappointed to see the title shot.
Yeah,
so
that is much more due to their own structure than it is to New Japan, because they've done that before as well, where they do the G Pro Wrestling main event and then they transition to the UWF portion of the show. They really, only on their G Pro Wrestling shows, they mix the matches where they do a UWF rules match every once and so often. But when they do their great version shows, they always have this strict division between G Pro Wrestling and the UWF style matches.
Yeah, except the title was in the main event and all the other defenses, except for this one. So
yeah, but those were G Pro Wrestling shows.
Well, I don't care.
Like, yeah, I know you don't care, like, but just
because it's not right. Like, I don't care about any what excuse you're going to give me. It should be in the damn main event because it's the world title. Like, why are they doing this? And they've treated this guy so poorly as champion. I just want him to lose it because it's clear they don't believe in him as champion. Like, the way they treat him, the way they put him in New Japan. Why are you moving him third from the top? He deserves better.
Wait a second. They don't believe in this guy?
Look at him. He lost.
Why would you get the title in the first place if they don't believe in him? And why did you get the Korakuen main event in May when they don't believe in him? I don't think that's true.
Well, why is he third? You know, I just wish that they would treat him like a better champion, is all I'm saying here, because I think he deserves so much better. You know, this match should have been the main focus of the show, in my opinion. Instead, it's third from the top, you know, to a five-minute match, which, I liked both the UWF matches, and obviously, I get it with the God and all that, but to me, this reeks of New Japan stuff again. I'm not buying that excuse about
Bates. I think you're overreacting to this, Dylan, to be quite honest.
Well, maybe so, but I like all the other matches, the title was in the main event. And suddenly now it's because of the UWF style?
Yeah, that's what they do.
And what they do is they main evented the show every other time with the title, though. That's the evidence we have. You're talking about shows without the title on it, which does not matter to this particular conversation.
No, I'm talking about these mixed shows where they want to present their entire roster and their entire styles. That's what they did. On the, well, they didn't have the championship back then, of course, yes.
Yes, exactly.
That's what they did last year, too. In Great Version 2, they had the Hair versus Hair main event. They had the UWF-style matches in front. And they, for example, here, on the Great Version 2 last year, they had, Shuji Ishikawa versus Takanori Ito. And Masakatsu Funaki and Minoru Tanaka versus Daijiro Matsui and Mitsuya Nagai. That match happened as the fourth and fifth match on the show. And then there were other matches that completely sound like more opening matches, like Atsuki Aoyagi, Jun Tonshu, and Takuo Niki versus Juna Masaoka, Keiichi Sato, and Tsuma Watanabe. That followed Shuji Ishikawa versus Takanori Ito. So it is due to the division that they do on these version shows. It's just their inbuilt thing. And I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just saying that's what they do.
Okay. Well, you know, either way, I don't think it puts the champion in a good light.
That is true, I guess. Yes, yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It feels like this whole title reign, they've gone out of their way to not put him in a good light.
He called out Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Doki after the main event. And if I understood it correctly, he wants to have title matches with them. So that remains to be seen if New Japan will have them drop faults to Linneman now.
That's true. I do think the good thing about that is at least that he was already in the tournament. So he already did pick up some wins over some people. Yeah. And maybe that would be a good thing. You know, like I said, I mentioned it on the, I don't think this was, you know, this was on the Patreon show, but I mentioned it then. Kanemaru's had a pretty good run lately, too.
Yeah.
So that could actually be a good match. And obviously, I love Doki. So I'm all for that. Like you said, maybe I was just a little bitter on this being so low. And because we've seen that in so many companies. It's not just this show, either. You know, like we've seen New Japan weasel their way into the main event and knock people out and win titles and stuff like that.
Yes.
You know, like I said, I can't fully buy your explanation. You know, like I said, at the end of the day. But we'll see going forward, you know. These version shows, we will see. And I understand it, at least in this case as well, so I can't completely hate on it. But overall, what I was trying to say was maybe I came in a little down on it because I thought this was a good match, but it was a little disappointing from where I thought they would be.
Mm.
You know, when you see these names, you want it to be this great, spectacular match, but I thought this was really good, but not, you know, I thought that it could have been a little bit better.
I think that Itsuki did a good job, because you got to think about that not only 1 year ago, he was still wrestling in Heat Up. And that is a very tiny indie.
Yeah.
They every once in a while get a good crowd in the 500s region, but they mostly are a very small company. And here he was on this big stage, on this big, great show, wrestling their champion. And I thought he delivered in this position. He didn't look nervous at all. He just did what he was supposed to do. So big props to Itsuki for stepping up to the plate here. Then I would say the match structure was a bit lackluster, because Lindemann in the first part of the match tried to work over Itsuki's leg with some holds, and they also did a spot where Itsuki kicked the ring post when he wanted to kick Lindemann, but that didn't really play into any other portion of the match, and I don't think then what was necessary at all if you don't pick it up at least for some more moments in the match. It doesn't necessarily have to be part of the finish, but it has to be part of the match going on, and it wasn't.
That's a good one.
What was good about the match, though, was the match was very fluent, at a good pace, and also they did this thing where Itsuki has this spinning version of the Hidden Blade. And he did that once to Lindemann, but couldn't follow up with a cover, only got a two count. Then he tried it once more. Lindemann tried to counter it, then was caught in a triangle choke by Itsuki. And for the third time, when Itsuki tried it for a third time, Lindemann caught him and landed the Tiger Suplex for the finish. So I thought that was, from the layout, was the best portion of the match. Didn't like the legwork.
Yeah, I think that's all of those comments are very valid, in my opinion. I thought they're very, very good points on your part. You know, still, though, on this show, like I said, I feel like all of the matches, although they were different, I think that's the great thing about this company, is that you look at all of these matches, whether it's the tag match I talked about, the women's match, this match, or the UWF matches, all of them bring something different to the table. So even though I think they're on the same level, it kind of depends on what you're going to lean towards. And, you know, I thought this was very much, you could argue, still one of the best matches of the show, if not the match of the night, even when you look at it going forward. So that's pretty cool stuff there. I hope that they can continue to get behind the 60 Seconds group, because I love all those guys. I think they're a great faction. Lindemann, like I said, I've really been hot and cold on this title reign so far. Hopefully they can get some good stuff going with the New Japan guys, because I especially think that Doki match could be something really spectacular. But anything, if they, like you were saying, if they could get these guys to do the job for him, that's going to be a really big win, in my opinion, to have a show on your, you know, finally defend home turf, because I think that was a big problem of this show. It's like there's all these outsiders that are like getting your wins, the House of Torture, you know, Gamma, you know, and then I think that's something that can be good for now, but if they keep doing it over and over, I feel like it just makes your guys, eventually that can bite you in the ass, you know what I'm saying?
It will bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
And that is also one of the problems that they have with the UWF portion of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that we talked about when we previewed the show briefly in one of our last episodes. It was clear that neither Yu Itsuka nor Takanori Ito would win their matches against Shinya Aoki and Yuji Nagata. While they were good matches, and I liked both of these matches, it's questionable if you should do that long term, just to have UWF rules matches to put your guys in these situations where they always lose. I mean, they can step up, and like Yui Suka said, he said it will take a while until I get there where I want to be. But yeah, right now he's a guy that has, I think he lost a lot of what people saw in him this year because of the position he was put in by Great. He's not that fiery anymore. He feels like just a guy.
And I think that's a problem with multiple people, like in this company this year, for whatever reason. As much as I enjoy their shows, and I think he front and center is, it fit exactly what you just said. Last year, he was like, to me, one of the best wrestlers in the country, you know, the entire country. I think he had an amazing run. He looked like a guy. You know, it's tough when you say you know, star, champion, things like that. But just as a wrestler, he felt like a top-tier talent and a great prospect going forward. And now this year, like you said, he's basically been turned into a guy that you never really hear anything about having great matches, even though he's on all these shows. He always works good. He looks good in all of his matches because he's a supreme talent. But he's not having what he did. You know, he's not doing the same caliber of work that he was doing last year, not because of him, but like you said, the presentation. He's lost a lot. Not just that he lost his aura, he just loses a lot if you look at his record. And I think that's hurt him as well. And they've not really put any kind of focus or position on him. Out of everybody, he feels like the odd man out this year, because then you see all these factions, and he's yet to really find his way.
Yeah, they finally have to pull the trigger on the faction that they always play for with him, Takanori Ito, and Sumo Watanabe, because all these guys, they need something. And I said it months ago when they started the program, but they still haven't gone through with that.
Yeah, and I think that's really hurt all three men. I would say Ito has been the most protected out of all of them, or at least he's the one that feels the most special. And it helps that whenever they have these New Japan shows, he's always the one in the main event. Again, I think that definitely yes. helps him on there, like helps him stand out with these guys. But poor Iizuka, it's like, man, you're here. And I thought that, honestly, like, I mean, this was a short match, but I thought the work was really good in it. Like,
the work was very good, and they used the 5-point system very well, because up until the finish, both him and Shinya Aoki still had their 5 lost points. So it actually was a very leveled match, but then the experience of Shinya Aoki struck, and he just choked him out.
Absolutely. Like, it was a great, like I said, it was a really great, well-done match for what it was. So I love him as a talent. I hope that they have some kind of plan going forward for him. But I, like I said, I feel like a lot of guys have kind of taken that a step back a little bit when it comes to how, like you said, last year, it felt like they had all of this positive momentum going forward. And now some of these guys, and even now someone like, you know, we talked about it earlier with Kawakami. It's like these guys have had big performances, and now you're just going to put him in this. Like, now you see him as in this mid-card team to lose to Gamma. And it's just like, you know, yeah. That's a kind of a step back, so to speak. But what did you think of the main event overall?
I thought the work in this main event was good as well. I don't know. I would put it mildly below the Aoki versus Iizuka match.
I agree with that.
Maybe it was just due to the fact that it was much longer than the other one. The Aoki versus Iizuka one felt more compact. Like, they put the necessary work into the 5 minutes and then they just finished. For Nagata and Ito, it felt like for some portion of the match, they just scrambled at the bottom.
I also think Nagata, love him. He's old. I think we need to kind of accept that at this point. And like I said, one of my favorites of all time, it's Father Time is undefeated. Nobody is immune to this. He's not what he was, and it's not like he's some terrible performer that's like, you know, ruining his legacy or anything like that. It's just he's not what he was, and he probably shouldn't be in main events.
If you think about this kind of style, take Aoki and Iizuka, you think about slick transitions and fast-paced changes on top position to guard position to whatever. It's just Nagata isn't that quick anymore.
Yeah, like I said, I think that basically the best part of this match to me was when they just dropped all that and went to the slaps. like that. That's when Nagata could bring a little bit of that fire, because he's still got that.
Nagata hit him with a fist, and the ref said, "Oh, that was a fist." And Nagata said, "Huh?" Nagata, yep, fist.
Yeah, yes, that is true. But yeah, you know, so there were good portions of this match. It's not like I said, it's not like it was this terrible match that I hated or anything. It's just, you know, Nagata, again, you see these names on paper and you want this big match that you think is like, oh, here we go. And then by the time it happened, by the time it ended, you were like, oh, that was good. Like, you know,
right.
So, you know, and I think that's kind of where he is going to peek out at. And we'll see, because, you know, a lot of people think he has a big, you know, there's big plans for him in All Japan. If maybe he's getting his, you know, because look, at another thing is, never mind that he's just old. He has not had any real test in a long time. This man has been stuck in meaningless undercard matches forever. Not exactly the, you know, the most daring matches to work. So maybe by the end of it, if they do have some plans for him, he gets to have matches over and over, gets a few matches under his belt in big situations, singles matches. We can see him pull something out a little bit higher caliber than this. But when you look at him, when you look at how he moves, I do think that there is a definite ceiling to his work. And even as a fan of his, I do accept that at this point.
Yes, I guess that's a very healthy approach to dealing with Yuji Nagata going forward. Going forward for great, they announced that they will be introducing a new championship. And the new championship will be a tag team title. I guess they showed it in the video, but they didn't specify it in the tweet they made, actually, because it was kind of confusing for me, because they announced the G-Infinity Championship, and they said that in the tournament there will be Kento Miyahara, and they also announced Flamita. I guess he will be in the tournament as well, bringing a partner. That's what I took from there. Definitely, Kento Miyahara will be in the tournament. I guess he will be teaming with Rising Hayato now that Nextreme is not a thing anymore. Tag team title is something that Great could use very well.
Yeah, I love it. I think this company actually, they're one of the rare companies that could use more titles,
yeah,
in my opinion, because they have a lot of different opportunities, and each one could be important if they play their cards right. With the UWF style, the women's division, you know, the tag team, that could be cool. But yeah, you know, when you see it early on, Kento coming into Great, I think that's awesome. Obviously, Kento not the Triple Crown champion anymore. If they did have some kind of plan for him as a tag team champion, I think that's totally awesome. Gives you a legit, you know, main event guy to kind of bolster your roster with. I love Kento, obviously, in that role. But even in a tag team role, I think that, too, if you have a main guy as a champion, that will elevate the titles. You know, that tells you right away that you see the titles as something worth caring about. And with, obviously, I think ideally, and what everyone thinks of in this company, you think of Lindemann and T-Hawk as the top tag team, but Lindemann's the singles champion right now.
Right.
So they might want to have different people as the tag team champion. And I think somebody like that would be great. You know, no pun intended. I think he would be a really good champion, a good fit, have him have special matches. And it gives him something to do, too, because we don't really know where he's going to go in the near future. So it gives him a unique spotlight for himself. And I maybe can wrestle some different matches. I want to see Kento in a UWF style match. Let's see something totally different outside of the box. That's what I want to see. But, you know, I think it's great bringing him in. And I think that the company itself is, we have to praise. Again, I don't love a lot of their booking right now this year when it comes to some of their younger stars or just everybody in general, it feels like, for a lot of the times. But we have to give them a ton of credit because they have mixed and matched with different promotions.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty masterfully, I have to say. With New Japan and All Japan at the same time, I think they've done a great job. All the Joshi promotions, you really have to love what they've done. And I think that makes their cards feel that much more special. When you could have an Asuka Yagi in one match, and then a Shima and a Gamma in one match, and then a Nagata, and then a Shinya Aoki, mainly known for DDT. So it's like they're working with all these different companies, and I think it's a really cool thing.
They also had Masato Kamino on one of their shows. He's also one of these guys that don't really get a lot of attention because he's mainly wrestling for Pro Wrestling Basara. So they are scrapping the indies as well. Like, doing a good job.
Yeah, really good company. Again, I still have nothing but love for them. Maybe you were right. I overreacted on a little bit. You know, I'm just cranky right now, Strick. I haven't had it.
I mean, there's reasons for being cranky because this presentation since May hasn't been the best. So I can see where you're coming from because we always want the best for Lindemann on this show.
Lindemann is like our unofficial mascot, I feel like. Yeah,
he's our son.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And we love him very much. And he's just an amazing talent. So you always want the best for him. But, you know, like you know, realistically, it hasn't been the best. But hopefully they're moving forward to bigger and better things going forward. But I will remember this. If next version show he's in the main event, I will point this out to you. I will complain about this all again.
All right,
something that happened once ago.
Next up for Great is their G Pro Wrestling version 29 on July 17. No card announced yet, but it was announced that Doki and Yoshinobu Kanemaru will be on that show.
We always need more Doki in our lives.
Yes.
I think is the best lesson. And like
give
I said,
give me a UWF Doki match.
Absolutely, he can bring in, break out some shoot lucha submissions.
Yeah,
but you know, again, I really liked Kanemaru, what he's been doing lately. I don't know if what the plan is for them. They have singles matches, tag match. Either one would work. They're obviously in the same faction, so if they did a tag match, I think that would be really cool. And like I said, think they could do some really good work with anybody. And hopefully Lindemann does. I'd love to see Lindemann, especially Doki. It's nothing against Doki. It's just the timing of it, I just thought was such like a dick move by New Japan to have him lose right before the Irie match. I was like, ah, like, why are you doing this? There's no reason for this other than just be like, you know, overlord great here. So he needs to get revenge.
Being the Empire.
Yeah, the Evil Empire. Right, yes. Now, the Bushiroad Evil Empire. But he needs to get that win back. Mostly, I think, most importantly, for my sake. Now that my soul can be at peace now. If Lindemann finally gets his revenge on Doki. The one thing I'm looking forward to most.
Okay. That is it for great, I think. And Dylan, it happened.
I know you can't wait to talk about this.
When we talked about Jun Akiyama versus Katsusada Higuchi last year, where Higuchi put the belt on Akiyama, I said, next time when he challenges for the championship, he will win the title. And Carsten put it over on Twitter as well. While I didn't, it wasn't a traditional title challenge because it was a unique situation of them having to find a new champion after Tetsuya Endo's injury. But still, though, Katsusada Higuchi won the King of DDT in the final that I wanted. And in the final, Dylan, that is right now my front runner for match of the year. Sadly, 3 days too late for our half-year awards. But it will be in contention at the end of the year for my match of the year. The final of the King of DDT between Katsusada Higuchi and Naomi Yoshimura. And while I will sing all the praise for Higuchi, and we can talk about the aftermath of the match, of course, I also want to point out that Naomi Yoshimura had an incredible tournament. The match that he had with Harashima was absolutely outstanding. We have talked about that before. The match he had with Yuki Ueno on this show, I thought was okay. Left a lot to be desired, in my opinion. Was some cool moments with him selling the dropkick and then getting him down with the lariat. But not the best match between the two, I think.
Really weird how they laid that out, because it was like, we're going to work this kind of... It felt like they were really...
style moves and moves match.
Yeah, especially, like, but, they started, the first half of the match was really kind of not that, and then they just went right to it, and then it's like, oh, three or 4 minutes later, well, the match is over, like, you know, so it's, that, like you said, it could have been a lot more well thought out, I think, and Ueno is somebody I love, but I totally agree with you on that Hiroshima match with Yoshimura. That was my favorite match of the tournament before the final.
And then we had the second semifinal with Katsusada Higuchi facing the aforementioned Jun Akiyama in a match that I completely adored, because it basically was structured around the fact that they both have moves where, or holds, more to say, where they squeeze the opposition. And Jun Akiyama tried it. He tried to squeeze him with his front neck lock. Then Katsusada Higuchi went to his brain claw and in the end was successful with his brain claw. So I thought that was a really nice way of going to that story. And basically Higuchi won both of his matches with the brain claw slam. That has become one of his go-to moves. And overall, I think this only we only talked about the semifinals and briefly the final right now. Overall, I thought this was a very good show as well for DDT. Top to bottom, brought everything that DDT has to offer. They also brought out Tetsuya Endo. He explained that he shouldn't have... That's at least what Bali and Aki translated, I think, that he shouldn't have been in this position while being champion. So he had to vacate the championship, and he's returning at the end of July. And Higuchi, after the main event, already called out that he will be defending the championship against Tetsuya Endo at Peter Pan on August 20. But what do you think about the main event match?
Yeah, I thought the semifinals both... I liked that match with Akiyama, I do think it suffered from a similar problem. They stretched out a little bit more, but it was like, again, early on, you kind of drag things out, and then finally, with, you know, it's like you flipped a switch, and suddenly we're doing our big moves now. But thankfully, Higuchi, the brain claw, has to be one of the best moves in wrestling right now, in my opinion. As soon as he did it the first time, I ranted and raved on the Patreon about how great this move was over the course of the years. I know me and Rob were doing shows, and he was like, "Oh, the brain claw sucks." And I was like, no.
Now!
I had to fight back on that. Much like, you know, I fight for what I believe in, Stringer. And what I believe in most is the brain claw, the power of the claw. But, you know, the match was okay. You know, neither of them really left a huge mark on me. I was just like, okay, I'm ready for this final. Higuchi and Yoshimura, this is perfect stylistically. It felt to me like, because I know everybody always says, and I think, and I'm probably among the most cynical, but in this particular situation, it took a crazy scenario for this to happen with Endo and injury and all of that. But when I saw these semifinals, I thought, okay, like, this is a legit chance now Higuchi can win this. It's not just some fan type of deal. This, he can really win. And they set up the final, I thought, okay, Higuchi's going to win here. And they had a really strong match, and in the end, Higuchi did overcome with the wonderful Iron Claw. The aftermath of it all, and I totally agree with you, by the way, too.
Before we go to the aftermath, I want to talk about a bit more about this match and about the claw itself.
Yes, it's wonderful.
I want to read this tweet that I sent out on October 10, 2015. It was about a match between Higuchi and Tsurugu Miyatake, a DDT rookie at the time. DNA 4 was the show. DNA was the development brand of DDT for a long time. DDT New Attitude. And I said, Higuchi did one of the few believable Iron Claw spots in wrestling just because his hand is almost bigger than Miyatake's face. And that is true. He's a huge guy. And as a huge guy like him, doing a claw spot is just so believable and easy at the same time, because you basically don't have to do anything big. You just have to put your hand onto the guy's face.
Well, first of all, I'm not liking the tone of this. That sounded like an anti-Iron Claw tweet you made there back then. That no believable ones except for this one?
There are a few believable claws in wrestling.
But mostly you think they look dumb.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't agree with you. The claw rules. I don't care who does it. but no. It honestly is really awesome. Like the way he does it, he has that extra oomph to it, yes, as well. And you know, a lot of his moves have that. Just like that running run through a guy move.
Butchikamashi.
Yeah, exactly.
The running shoulder block.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Other people can do that move, but he does it in a way that looks completely awesome.
Yes.
And I think Hideyoshi
Kamitani does it too in Big Japan, but he's a lot smaller than Higuchi is.
And he doesn't do it as good as Higuchi does. Right. Like, Higuchi's is just really awesome. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, even other great wrestlers, like, you know, you could say someone like an Okabayashi can do a shoulder block, but not like he doesn't. No, right. Higuchi, his shoulder block is the best. And this Iron Claw is the best as well. So he always puts a little bit of extra oomph in his moves. And for a long time, it felt like he was just floating in this mid-card with no real direction other than, you know, eruption guy, like pretty much. And now, through circumstance, but also through his hard work, that he's been able to ascend to this level to where he is a championship-level player. It felt like a huge deal. They made it feel like a huge deal. But I wanted to mention, too, like, when this match happened in the main event, I thought this was a really strong show. Besides the Pheromones match, which they're doing a storyline with Akito right now, everything after that I thought was hits, you know, pretty much in some way or another. You know, the semifinal matches weren't super great to me, but once you got past those, they were good watches, fine stuff. That's cool. But then you got to the other matches. I thought the tag matches both were highly effective, and then it all led to the main event, to where you get this spectacular moment. And that, you know, especially if you're a fan, if you've been following this guy's run, because in those DNA days, he was the choice of the English-speaking fan base.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everybody gravitated towards him. When he was the main, you know, it felt like he could be a top star. Everybody wanted him. Everybody wanted him in other promotions. Even if you weren't a fan of DDT, you wanted him.
He was in the Noah Global League.
Yeah. That was like 2017, 18. Mm-hmm. Like that. So he, you know, that was a few years ago now, and everybody loved him back then. I remember thinking about him. I always thought, you know, Higuchi, I love him, and Ueno, great wrestler. You've had guys, you know, up and down. You know, Koki was a great worker there. Umeda was like, they had a lot of good guys in DNA, but he was the one that I think the majority of the English speaking fans really gravitated to. So you, if you followed him since DNA, then this is a huge journey, a years long deal. And it's just a great thing that added that much more to what, even if you weren't that kind of fan, if you're just somebody who jumped in during Eruption era Higuchi, and now you see this, it made it feel like this is one of the biggest things to happen in the company in years.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the match, we of course know that his background is a sumo background. You mentioned the tackle that he uses in his wrestling. We've seen that mostly in his first outings in DNA back then in 2015, that he still had this sumo background that now also the rookie Yuki Ishida also has. And you can see it. And the background in sumo versus Naomi Yoshimura's background in judo played a role in this match, because it basically not only was a pro wrestling match, but it also was a sumo versus a judo match. Because remember, Naomi Yoshimura uses his haraigoshi, this judo throw, to finish his matches, and he did it against Yuki Ueno as well, and followed up with the Osaka Pride to finish the match then. And he also tried it on Higuchi twice in the match, actually. First time, Higuchi just blocked him, and they went to the ropes once more, where Higuchi brought out this incredible lariat. The second time he did it, it led straight to the finish, because once again, the haraigoshi wasn't successful, and Higuchi could just beat him after that. But also in the match, Yoshimura also got his chances, because Bali and Aki also noted it on commentary. One time in the match, Higuchi went to the top rope, and that is something that he usually doesn't do, and it completely bit him in the ass, and you could see it on his face. When Yoshimura was coming up to him, Higuchi said, "Ah, shit, I shouldn't have done that." He ate his superplex, but then he had this complete Superman moment in the match where he no-sold the superplex, he did the lariat, and they did some more big-time moves. So it was not like no-selling, but it is this portion of the matches where the adrenaline runs high on you in the Japanese wrestling. And all of that together, this match was an incredible roller coaster, not only from the wrestling portion, but for me, especially from the emotional standpoint. That is why I rate it so highly right now.
And sometimes that's, you know, we can all have our emotional favorites. You know, there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's what wrestling at its core is about. I always say this. I even said this to like wrestlers, whenever they come to me for anything. I say, you know, wins and losses are secondary to how you make people feel. And in this case, how you felt all of those years came through with him winning. And that's what makes it so special as a fan, you know? So I think that's an amazing story. And obviously it was, like I said, I feel like after everything, this guy had so much potential. It felt like, again, 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been fighting for him to be a champion, but then he just kept never getting his shot, really. You know, never being able to take the step up. And my interest in him kind of waned, to be honest with you, over the years. I mean, he's always a good worker. Don't get me wrong. I always love his wrestling, no matter what he's doing. But he just wasn't that interesting as a character for a long time, to be honest with you. And I kind of felt they had him in a good role with Eruption. But now that they've got him here, they pushed him up to this point. They pulled the trigger. It feels like a great thing, and it felt like a special moment when he won. Again, I don't think just to you. I think everybody watching this can see this huge deal.
These images, just the complete package of it all was so incredible. Just in the moment the ref counted the 3 count, Yukio Sakaguchi sprinted into the ring. It almost felt like that, like he wanted to interfere into the match, and he just attacked Higuchi with a hug. Higuchi had to realize who it was, and he smiled so hugely. Then Okatani came into the ring. Saki Akai came too. They were all just a big, happy family. Then he was supposed to get the title from the GM, and Jun Akiyama stepped in, and he took the belt, and he strapped him just like Higuchi did with Akiyama when they had their match. What an incredible moment that must have been for a guy like Higuchi to be strapped by this legend, Jun Akiyama.
You had the build-up, you had the same, you know, the callback to last time when they did it. Just everything about it was perfect, you know, and the emotion from Yukio really made it seem like something special. And it felt like something that, again, wasn't just some angle. It was real that they did that. And it made you feel, it made you get emotional. And that's what wrestling, that's the best kind of wrestling is all about, is when you get emotional about things and you see something like this happen. And, you know, they can never take this moment away. We know nobody yeah. knows what's going to happen in the future. They can never, they did it so perfectly that it's something everybody will always remember.
And they even went to lengths where it will be really hard to deny that this moment was incredibly special, because not only did that happen, but then there was Sanshiro Takagi, who had this giant DDT flag in his hand. And you can't have a bigger symbol of a passing the torch moment. Well, you could have a torch, of course. but a flag is very good as well. But he passed him the flag of DDT. And that, I mean, Tetsuya Endo is still there. Konosuke Takeshita is coming back. Higuchi has to be in the top conversation now with the company because of the way they presented him on the show.
And it's kind of crazy to think about, because, you know, coming into this, I thought, you know, this is going to be a big win for Higuchi. It's going to be awesome. I was really looking forward to it. But it was so well done and so spectacular, everything they put into it, all of the heart and soul they put into all of this, that it's like, this felt like an impromptu, just like you said, an impromptu passing of the torch now, to where now he is now the top guy in the company. And I don't think anybody really expected that to happen coming into it, where, you know, this, everybody knows that it really wasn't meant to be this way. Like, Endo was supposed to be the champion. Mm-hmm. But the way they did it, like I said, it made it feel like this, they've stumbled into something that's so great and so cool that, like you said, how could they deny it at this point? You know, you can't really deny it because it was so amazing.
And you know,
so
what?
To see that was great.
And yeah. I think they are still going through with their planned main event for Peter Pan, because I really think that Higuchi was meant to win this tournament in the first place too, mm-hmm. to challenge Tetsuya Endo. So that gave them just another layer for the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I could totally buy that. I mean, obviously he won, so that's the logical thought would be that they had planned him to win to be the one in the main event. So doing that, that could have been a big deal as well, but I thought it was great how they did it. And it adds an extra, like you said, an extra layer, and especially an extra layer of intrigue going into the main event, because you can't count out that they would want to go to Endo again, especially his return from injury. I said it before, when he got injured the first time, that it's probably going to be a really emotional thing when he comes back. I think they have a lot going into it. They put a lot into Endo. But obviously, with all of this, you have to believe Higuchi is the guy for the foreseeable future.
Absolutely, yeah. Wow, so yeah, that was a great, great ending to this show. And you mentioned this show really was a good one. We had in the dark match, and Balianaki also said it on commentary, that it was much more actually than a dark match, because they really performed on a high level, especially Yukio Sakaguchi and Toi Kojima had great moments in this match. It was Eruption, Yukio Sakaguchi, Saki Akai, and Hideki Okatani defeating Toru Owashi, Soma Takao, and Toi Kojima. Then Damnation TA, Daisuke Sasaki, MJ Paul, and Cannon defeated Yuji Hino, Yuki Naya, and Yuki Ishida. You mentioned the Pheromones match that was there against Akito, Antonio Honda, and Katsuki Hirata, the usual shtick that they do. Then a really cool tag team match in the mid-card with Yusuke Okada and Yuya Kuroku overcoming Harashima and Masahiro Takanashi. Takanashi felt very sure that he would win this match, that he even tried to clown with Okada and Kuroku, and it bit them in the ass in the end when Okada bursted out his sudden death fireman's buster for the win, and he challenged Masahiro Takanashi for the DDT Universal Championship, which is a match that I can't wait for with two of the most underrated technical guys in Japanese wrestling.
This was my emotional moment to see Okada actually get a win. That's way more unbelievable than Higuchi winning the title. I mean, this guy was left off the card on Cyber Fight Fest. They just forgot about him. He's disappeared over the last, and really over the last year. It feels like he had that hot start when he came into the company. He had those matches with Ueno. Everybody loved him. They were amazing. And then it's like he just fell off the face of the earth for some reason. Like totally, you know, background player in the company. And now they finally, pretty much out of nowhere, there was no real build to this, but he gets this win over Masa to set up a title shot. And I love it. Like, he deserves it. He's one of the best workers on the roster, one of the best pure wrestlers in general and anywhere, in my opinion. And I've always been a huge fan of his. Since the day he walked out in All Japan, I thought this Okada is something special. He has what it takes. He has everything it takes, the wrestling, the charisma. I think he has everything. And it's just not worked out for whatever reason. Who knows what those reasons are specifically. But now he gets a shot again. I hope that he wins that title so much. Like I'm going to be so emotionally invested in that match that I love what they did here to give him the win, set up a great title match. And Masa, like you said, really a big fan of his too. Love his flash pin gimmick that he's had for a long time. And I think they could have a really good match together. And I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to be super invested in it. You there?
Oh, sorry, I was muted. I absolutely agree with that. I really hope that they do this match on Peter Pan to give them the big stage that they deserve and not like on a Kurikan before that. Really hoping for that. And there was one more match on this show. I guess not your favorite type of match. I thought it was amusing when they brought in Andrew the Giant Everett, who is a 175 centimeters giant next to Chris Brooks, who had to get on his knees to be to not tower over Andrew Everett. But it remains to be seen what it means for Everett to come into DDT, because I thought that this felt like it fit the DDT route of comedy, him teaming with Brooks against Mao and Chuma Katsumata. He won with a choke slam Spanish fly against Katsumata. Everett has been doing this gimmick that he's the supposed giant on the indies, for example, in Deadlock Pro before, and now he was brought up over to DDT. And Dylan, we've already talked about Noah bringing in all these indie guys, and it might seem like this is very similar to Pro Wrestling Noah bringing in all this random indie talent. I want to address this here because I feel like for DDT, it is different than it is for Noah, because DDT, they are a company that is just known for doing random stuff all the time. I mean, they do have a 10-man tag team title that they decided one day is not a 10-man tag team title anymore. That is an 8-man tag team title. Then they went back to it being a 10-man tag team title. And the champions, who only consisted of four guys, they weren't allowed to announce a fifth guy for the 10-man tag team title match. So they will just go out of their way to do random stuff. So then them bringing in guys like Andrew Everett, I don't really have a problem with that. Whereas for Noah bringing in all these guys that just don't seem to have like a connection to the company feels really weird.
Well, it's definitely like Noah in that Everett's been in Noah before, actually, a few years ago. He's a guy there. That was when they were working closely. It was like, remember when Ishimori was still in Noah, but he also wrestled TNA? Because Everett's like a TNA, or Impact Wrestling, excuse me.
Yeah.
We had this conversation on the Patreon show about how I always call it TNA. But yeah, he was there in Noah, actually, a few years ago when all that was going on. So he does have that background. DDT, you know, they've always brought in kind of random people, at the end of the day, you know, like all the way back to freaking Joey Ryan and stuff like that on there.
Royce Isaacs was on one of their tours, or a few of their tours, actually, before he even became what he is now with New Japan Strong and the West Coast Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, I felt like he wasn't there that long. Yeah, Jason the Gift Kincaid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know. So,
Eerie's weird group, right.
Oh, right, Renegades, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't a super big success, to say the least. But still, that's kind of something for a DDT. As far as this whole deal with Everett, you know, for DDT, it works. It's not like I was thinking like, oh, you know, they're definitely better than Pheromones on the DDT comedy scale, I would say. But it just reminded me, it brought me back to the point we talked about on the last episode where I was talking about how they used the shoot weight for Nakajima. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird for me because, like I said, with that, it's like I'm 30 pounds bigger than you. Like Nakajima, and most of it's muscle. So it's not, like, what's most going on it. Here? Yeah. Like I said, and like this Andrew the Giant gimmick, I'm also 3 centimeters taller than him. So does that make me a giant as well?
Yes.
That would be a good thing. 3 cm. There.
You're a certified giant now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's proven based on this nickname here. You know, like, you know, again, it's a goofy gimmick. It's nothing that really lights my world on fire. But for a DDT guy, you know, he fits the kind of staple of someone like a Brooks-esque person, but very athletic guy and can do a lot, you know, as a dynamic performer, but also does not shy away from comedic timing either, clearly. So, you know, I think it worked pretty well overall, and I think it fit right in with DDT. Again, you know, there was years past where I probably would look down on something like this, but right now, for DDT, you watch it in the context, and I think it worked totally for the DDT audience.
Surely it did, and they'll do more with Everett, I think, because I think that the crowd took to this gimmick as well. And yeah, I guess that is DDT for now. As I said, the next big show is coming up on August 20 with Peter Pan, and that should be a great show once again.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, going into this show, and I think this tournament specifically, you know, because I watched the tournament matches and then this one, I think DDT, and it's not just this company, but I think this is definitely applies to them. I don't think they've had a really great year in general. Like, even for a DDT style, I think they had a lot more to them last year and in previous years. It feels like kind of a cold company coming out of Cyber Fight Fest. But then after this tournament, it feels like suddenly you've did this storyline. The tournament was really good up and down. I thought all of the matches were pretty much strong in the tournament, doing what they needed to do. You got a great winner in Higuchi. You have Okada going for a title. You've got a new player in Everett. It's like they have all kinds of stuff going on now. Endo coming back from injury. This feels like suddenly, in the course of a couple of shows, they went from a promotion that I really didn't think had a lot of good stuff going on in it, or interesting things would be more accurate going on in it, to now they feel like they're one of the hotter companies going now after this tournament. I think they've done a great job of establishing that, setting up Peter Pan.
DDT has always been very good at creating something from out of nowhere and lighting the world on fire with it just within a few days, few weeks of it. It's not like that the company has always had these hot streaks over 2 or 3 years, but there usually were some months, some shows where they really were hot, and the other time of the year they usually did their comedy route. But I agree that they didn't feel like a company that was on the front runner for Company of the Year this year in 2022. Basically, also due to something that Rob just tweeted, he said that DDT really feels like a different company or hotter than it does when they do have Endo and Takeshita on top of them. Because with Higuchi and Naomi Yoshimura, they now have two guys that they can use in main events going forward, and it just feels like something fresh is happening right now.
I think more so with Endo than Takeshita. I think last year they had a really good run with him on top. It felt like a strong company for what they wanted to do. Again, I'll always have my gripes with them, to be honest with you. But I felt like they were doing a lot of good stuff last year. Endo, we've talked about this a bunch of times. I don't think that this burning deal is perfect for him specifically. Mm. And I don't think his title reign was very good up to this point.
Yeah. So. He in a lot of ways, he feels like, how do I say that without sounding mean? He always seems like this promising guy, but the final oomph, the final spark with him, with his title reigns, that is always missing, I think.
Yeah, you're completely right on that. We've seen that before with him. So we'll have to see how, you know, I think now he has a little bit of a, you know, new life into him coming off of this injury. Everybody's going to want to see how he reacts, because that was such a big story. Mm. Well, you know, obviously it was a terrible thing that happened, but thankfully he's okay. He'll be back. And it was such a big story that it's possible they can springboard that to a very interesting character arc for him going forward, because now you get to see his response where it feels like, now, let's say he loses to Higuchi and Peter Pan, and that Higuchi goes forward as champion. You have a very easy path to say, to feel like, or for him as a character to feel like his title was robbed of him.
Yeah.
Through something that was from out of his control. How will he react to that? And you could split off to that in a bunch of different ways that makes him more intriguing as a character. So I'm actually kind of into Endo right now to see what he's going to do in the future. Well, maybe it'll turn out and I won't be like it, and maybe we'll still feel that way where there was something missing with him. But I'm kind of into what he's going to do next, just the intrigue of it all. So I think that's a good thing for him coming forward too, and hopefully they can parlay it into something interesting going forward.
Yes, that is that's actually This is one of those matches that I always call out for, where neither guy actually should lose the match. But when I think about it, the guy that could afford losing the worst between the two would be Higuchi right now after the steam that they gave him with his title win.
Yeah, I think if Higuchi loses, that's a pretty big blow.
Yeah, we went to square one with him.
Yeah, like that's and he's they've used that moment, you know, yeah. Like all of that cachet that they have. You can't do that again. You know, if he ever were to win the title again after that, you can't just go back and have it be like it was here. So I think that that would be a really questionable decision.
Really questionable. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think Higuchi will win, honestly. And you know, I think that it makes the most sense for both. I think Endo can get as much from a loss as he does for a win if they have some kind of plan in place. And obviously, again, we know that it wasn't supposed to be this way, but they've had a good amount of time now. You know, they've had a month at this point to think about where they're going to go upon his return. And I think that they can tell a lot of interesting stories. So hopefully they have something in mind for him going forward, because I do think, like I said, if he just wins and Higuchi loses right away, I think that's going to be a real bad look for Higuchi. And Endo obviously will get a triumphant win, and that's cool and all. But I also think he would benefit from a loss as well, just to explore some different territory as a character.
Yeah, we'll definitely see more of that and know more after that, after Ottawa. I think the show is in Ottawa. Peter Pan is definitely some interesting paths that DDT has now chosen, and very, very, very some very new options that they have now. For example, the question also is not only with Higuchi and Endo: has Yoshimura now surpassed Harashima that he has defeated him in the tournament, and what does it mean for their tag team?
Yeah, and Disaster Box as a whole, as a faction, out of all of the factions, they're the pretty much the longest tenured one in the company right now. So that seems like something, you know, are they on the verge of shaking things up? Which I've actually, of all of the DDT factions over the years, they were always my favorite one. So I kind of don't want them to break up, just because I feel like I have this history. And I think they do a great job with their factions as much as any other company. Obviously, Dragon Gate would be the head of the table on that. But I think DDT is right there with them with how they protect their factions. So I think that if they were to break up, it would be a big deal to the longtime followers. But I think that's a possibility we have to look at, considering that every other faction of their time has basically gone by the wayside and made way for something new. So it feels like we could be on the verge of something.
Except for
the Nation? Well, they were supposed to break up.
Yeah, because Daisuke Sasaki just doesn't play by the rules, Dylan.
Well, you're obviously Damnation did break up, but now we have Damnation TA, a much different, significantly different faction between Damnation. Yes. So,
a very significant change with Matt Pauly being gone and MJ Paul now being in the mix.
I mean, look, he's reinvented himself in many ways. But yeah, you know, besides all that, you know, Disaster Box is kind of the one that's never had any kind of change or anything. So hopefully we can see something going forward with that. Maybe a reunion. Like you said, maybe Yoshimura will surpass Hiroshima. I think that's an interesting story to tell as well. Maybe they can reunite as a tag team going forward, and this time Yoshimura will take the lead. Who knows where they go? They have a lot of different options again. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in the company. I think they've done a great job flip the switch on, again, and not just one thing. It's like 3, 4, 5 different things in the last couple of weeks that they flipped the switch on and can move forward into some really good things.
Absolutely. So, yeah, DDT, always a company that can flip the switch within a second. And that's really unique for them. Final topic for today, Dylan. We wanted to talk about Stardom a bit here, because not only did they have their big cage matches last weekend, but they also have the full lineup for the 5-Star Grand Prix. And we're going to talk about that here in a bit. But first of all, we've talked about in DMs about the cage matches that happened on June 26th. Can you tell us about your feelings about these two cage matches? First, Tam Nakano defeated Natsupoi in the semi-main of the show, and then there was a Steel Cage 6 women tag match with Stars, Mayu Iwatani, Hasuki, and Koguma, defeating Queen's Quest, Utami Hayashishita, Asaya Kamitani, and Asumi, with a great finish of Koguma diving off the cage and leaving Asumi in the cage as the losing post. What did you think about these matches?
Yeah, you know, the cage matches were great. I also want to shout out one of the undercard matches, the Artist of Stardom three-way match. The Oedo Tai team of Starlight Kid, Momo Watanabe, and Saki Kashima defending the titles over God's Eye team of Shuri, Mirai, Ami Sorei, and the Donna Del Mondo team of Julia, Micah, and Mai Sakurai. I think they finally... It's been a long road for Oedo Tai as a faction, and they finally got it right.
This team is great.
Yeah, this three-person team has really hit on something special, and amazingly centered really around Kashima as the main focus of a lot of their matches, and it somehow just works. Mm. It's so good. Again, one of my favorite tropes of wrestling is somebody with a flash pin gimmick.
Oh, yeah.
So I will always shout out Saki Kashima. And when she first turned heel, I thought that was a big... They dropped the ball big. When she first turned, they had the no people match with her and Mayu, and I thought it was really well done and exciting. The first ever YouTube show felt like a big deal. And then it's like they just dropped the ball, and that was it, pretty much. They didn't do anything for a while with her. And then they've had multiple turns to move people in and out of this faction. And now with Starlight Kid, always was doing great work in Oedo Tai. Momo turning into this heel version. Now, all three of them together, I think it totally works. It's finally happened to where they're back as a great stable like they used to be in the old days, although everything about them is a lot different than they used to be, but still, they're a really good portion of the company. So I wanted to shout out that match. I actually thought that was as good as the cage matches, to be honest.
It's not,
with you.
Not even an undercard match when you have a card with 6 matches.
I think it
was part of the matches that really drew the crowd for this show.
Yeah, good point. Third from the top at a 6-match show. Yeah, good stuff there. But the main draws unquestionably were the cage matches. I think we can see the first ever cage match. I really question, first of all, doing the first ever cage match and then immediately doing a second one. I don't love that idea, to be honest with you.
That's not a good idea, no.
No, to be honest, I definitely could have done without it, especially considering how it played out. But the singles match... A lot of people were talking about this one, Nakano and Natsupoi. As always with any Tam Nakano, anything she does, there was a long storyline and dramatic stuff at play, mostly through her own Twitter account that she uses to build up these matches, with just so much between the two, and she was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Tam Nakano... I absolutely love her as a worker, like the last true worker. And I mean that. I don't mean that as an in-ring performer. I mean it as like Onita style.
Yeah, we've talked about it. She has been inspired a lot by Atsushi Onita, and she's been learning from Onita. She started out with Onita.
Yeah. Yes, I remember. I tried to bring the deathmatch to Stardom at one point.
The Great Tom.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It's just swimming in the pool that they had. Yes, I remember all of this. But yes, like everything she does is geared towards getting attention on herself and her feud. I mean, we've seen, like I said, her Twitter account is just so off the wall that I can't even describe it properly. And then they added the thing into this feud here where, you know, not Sapoy going in there. So the point of it all is to just, you know, small story short, you know, they did all these rants doing virtual girlfriend stuff Tom was doing on her Twitter, bringing in Mistress Tom on there, which I love it. I'm all about it. And then we have this wrestling match in the steel cage somehow with Natsupoi. And I think that they did a great job of capturing the spirit of their feud and their grudge here. The rule set, I definitely think, was controversial because it was very different to your normal cage match. Basically, the deal was you can try and escape the cage, but you have to get a pinfall first. And that's how you win. You have to escape the cage after a pinfall. Me, personally, I may be in the minority on this based on a lot of the reviews I've seen. I think this is a good rule. Like, this is much more logical than just trying to run away. Because now we're in the middle of this grudge feud, and now my goal is to run away from you? I've never liked that style of cage match. And then in general, I think a lot of these gimmick matches, we talked about it with ladders before, but the cage applies too. I'm very burned out on these kind of, you know, that kind of gimmick. It just doesn't really work for me.
It takes any logic away from the idea why you would want to do a cage match, because you want these wrestlers inside the ring and they just can't escape. That's the idea.
That's what it was supposed to be. Yeah, exactly. And it's gone away from that to this crazy world of wrestling that we're in now. So now we have this, which is much more logical, in my opinion. So I like the rules. I will say that the one area that hurt, because we had this match, and I thought they had some good physicality in the match, and more so than physicality, it wasn't like there was anything here going like, oh my god, the violence. It was more like, these two are very fiery, they got across that they don't like each other, they're in this feud, Natsupoi really, really wants to beat Tom Nakano, and Nakano will not relent on that. Mistress Tom will not relent on that, as she called herself going into this matchup. Which, any relation to Mistress Newling from, or Yinling, the erotic terrorist from Hustle, there. So that's a deep cut right there. the old school wrestling right there. The definitive old school wrestling company, Hustle, for sure. But regardless, she will not relent and let Natsupoi beat her. So they fought. And like I said, the violence was fine. It wasn't anything super over the top or anything. Like, you're like, oh my god, I can't believe they're going so hard on each other. It's more so the fire of it and the spirit that they had was very important to this match. So then the one thing I think that the rules took away, and we kind of worked this out between each other, I think with some minor tweaks, this could have been a great match. And I know some people really loved it anyway and thought it was like a match of the year level match. To me, I think this all led to kind of a flat finish, because you have this amazing finish where she lifts her up, holds her up, hits the SSD, or the VSD, the violet screwdriver, not the Steiner screwdriver. But this devastating move, it was amazing.
Wow.
And then they have to have her get up because she needs to climb the cage, and then you do all this. It's like it was a double finish that didn't need to be there. The VSD should have been the end of the line, and that would have been a lot better than I think how they did it. I think that was the main thing, my takeaway. If they had been able to work out the match, the logic a little bit better. Obviously, I think this is probably one of the first times they've done a match like this. Obviously, the first ever cage match in Stardom history, but the first kind of any kind with this kind of rule set. So obviously, it's a new thing. Yeah. They probably didn't have the things down that we were talking about in the DMs. And if they could get them down, I think they could have a really, really great match. But still, I still really enjoyed this, though. I thought it was definitely the better of the two cage matches. And I liked how they sold it. It worked for me. The wrestling was really good for the most part. And, you know, I just think there were some tweaks that could be made with the rules, with everything. And I thought it was a recommended match, but not a super great one that maybe some other people thought.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, actually. And you said it. We talked about it in the DMs. And it was basically about this pinfall rule, where I also say that it can make sense to have this, to add a little obstacle that you have to go above before you get to escape the cage. But then again, they used it too often, in my opinion, to be eligible to leave the cage in this match for it to come across as a special rule. So if you want to implement this rule once more in the coming cage matches, I would love to see the opponents like fighting more to escape a pinfall than Tam and Natsupoi did in this match. There should only be a very few, like one or two pinfalls in a match like this to, in the end, lead to the finish and not like here we saw it a couple of times. So I agree with you. This definitely was a good match. Recommended definitely 8.39 on Cage Match, I think, is a rating that fits the match very well. And then again, the main event has a lower rating of 8.16. Didn't like that match as much like you either. Was confused a bit why the rule of pinning wasn't applied here. They just could escape right away.
Yeah. I hate these kind of matches. Where the cage matches... I don't even like the normal cage matches. I definitely don't like team cage matches. Where your stated goal or opportunity is to... Like, let's say me and you are in a tag team cage match.
We wrestle FTR for the IWGP Ring of Honor and AAA tag team titles.
Shout out Tony Khan. Thank you for booking us properly. Yes. Give me some promo time to hype this match up. I think we can get something good out of it. But yeah, let's say that happens. And the first thing I do is I run to the cage and climb out and leave you in there all alone with FTR.
So
why would I do that?
What happens then is I get beaten up by FTR for the next 5 minutes. I eat the Shatter Machine and I get laid out inside the ring while they just escape. Together.
Yes. I watched them escape as I've blown the match completely, like an idiot. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. There's no logic for anybody to allow that to happen. So I hate those kind of matches. I will say they did a good job. I mean, I still don't think it was a great match, but for a spectacle, I do think that
it worked.
It had that to it. You had big moments. You had Azumi diving off the cage with a double stomp. I love, too, that my favorites actually got all the shine here with Azumi and Kokoma, too. They saved the big dives for them. And they're probably like, they probably volunteered for this. Kokoma's like, yeah, I'll dive off the cage into the crowd. Forget it.
Yeah, you could see Mayu coming into the cage, and she was immediately like, oh, God, I hate this.
Yes, that was so funny. Honestly, like great Mayu, like Iwatani. Everybody knows Iwatani's greatness as a wrestler, but few people give her credit as an incredible comedic performer.
Yes,
I remember going all the way back to the old school Stardom World days. Another deep cut I'm about to lay out here. They had this thing where they would interview her, Kairi, and Io. But they would want them to do it in English. They were really pushing for this English fan base. This was before New Japan had subtitles, any of that stuff. So they did this interview series. They had them all sit in the back. And it was like this really weird setup, too. They were like camping or something. I can't remember specifically. But they were all sitting down. They were getting interviewed. And suddenly, like, Mayu's stuff would always be the most awkward but goofiest and most hilarious of everybody's, pretty much. Like, when they were talking about each other's nicknames at one point, she was just like, you know, I really like bumping. They should call me the bump technician. And I was just like, what? When that happened, it was awesome. I can't do justice to how she said it and how goofy she is. But I love Mayu Iwatani. Everybody knows that. Yeah, her selling coming into the cage was awesome. Very funny. And then the match itself, like I said, it was... If you keep your expectations of a match in check and just look at it as a spectacle, I think this worked. And then you had an utterly amazing finish that everyone will remember mostly, with Koguma, like you said, diving off the cage onto everybody, as she should. Bear power, like the era of the bear is here at Stardom, and she did it again here. A great, great ending to the show, even though, like I said, I'm not in love with the match just by choice, but they did enough to where it was at least entertaining, and I will accept that. Overall, but a very good show overall too. Just I thought for Stardom, as usual, they have a lot of talent up and down, so it's hard for them to have a bad show regardless of who they put anywhere. But I thought this was a good spectacle, especially for one without any kind of, like, you know, you expect a big match with Tall Saya or Shuri defending their titles. They didn't have that on this show, but it still came across really well, and they were able to do a great job with it.
Absolutely. Also, when you look at it, they ran this Nagoya Congress Center in Nagoya International Conference Hall it is. Once again, with a very good crowd for Stardom. So great year for them as a company. Then 2 days after that, they returned to Kirkland Hall, once again drawing 900 fans, 901 fan to be specific. And they finished their tournament before the tournament, actually, because they had their five-star Grand Prix qualifying league in Block A. Amisurei and Momokogo, Amisurei won the A block. Momokogo, Rina, and Miyu Amasaki came in on a shared second place, while Wakatsukiyama didn't win a single match in the tournament. In Block B, Sayaida and Mai Sakurai, they both ended up with 5 points and are qualified for the tournament. And third place, Ruaka, fourth, Hina, and fifth, Lady C, which then brings us to the complete field of the five-star Grand Prix. That is a long, long tournament this time, Dylan, starting on July 30 and running all the way until October 10. And the reason for it being, now that the G1 Climax has four blocks, Stardom figured, let's do two big blocks like the G1, but we'll add three more people to each block. So
yeah, they basically added all the people that they did in the G1, but they just said, well, we're just going to do two blocks. Like, they didn't get the memo of the four blocks. They're like, wait a minute, four blocks? Yeah, they should have done that.
They have 26 wrestlers in their two blocks now with Red Stars and Blue Stars. Want to run it through with you, Dylan. Red Stars, Shuri, Tam Nakano, Utami Hayashishita, Asumi, Koguma, Maika, Himeka, Tekla, Unagi Sayaka, Saki Kashima, Mai Sakurai, Risa Sera, and Saki. Blue Stars, Mayu Iwatani, Julia, Saya Kamitani, Starlight Kid, Momo Watanabe, Hasuki, Saya Ida, Natsupoi, Mina Shirakawa, Hanan, Mirai, Amisurei, and Suzu Suzuki. Whew, that took me some breath to run everything down here.
Shout out Excalibur right now.
Yes. So what do you think about these blocks?
A lot of talent in both blocks. I really like what they put together. And the blocks, it's hard to think about how this tournament's going to go, because I feel like it could go either way, where it's like all action, we all love it, it's amazing, and it's a fun journey we're on. Or this could be like, damn, this took forever. by the end of it, you know. But I really like what they did with the blocks. Some rematches from last year, I think that they probably could have mixed the match a little bit better from what they were doing last year. But the new people, I thought, really add a lot to the tournament. You look at the block, the Red Stars block, you have someone like a Tekla come again. Somebody that's been featured a lot over the year. Someone like Arisa Sarah, who had a really fun red belt title match versus Shuri. Very unique match.
I think it is an underrated match, actually, between her and Shuri, because they put a lot of emphasis on Arisa Sarah being the heel in this match. And the story of it was very simple but totally effective, because once Shuri got a hold of the kendo stick, it was all over for Risa Sera as a heel, and she then lost it very quickly. So, very effective story.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with you on that end. Saki, somebody who's been one of the... She's wrestling all over the place. I mean, if you look at her great work on the indies, obviously the owner of Colors, so she's representing her very own company.
Basically what was left from Actress Girls after they said that the talent under contract couldn't wrestle anywhere else anymore, and so the wrestlers that wanted to wrestle anywhere else left and formed Colors, which was a brand of Actress Girls before.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you talked about that. Also wrestling in the Catch the Wave tournament as well. So she's all in all sorts of tournaments, a very confusing tournament format in Wave, I will say.
It always confuses me, yes.
Par for the course, but this year especially, with the winner's block being added in after the other blocks finished in, it was a very interesting decision there. Her teamwork with Galaxy Punch, very famous and one of the best tag teams in all of Japan, in my opinion. So I think she's going to add a lot here, going to be very inspired, have a lot of fresh matchups going in there. And then in Blue Stars block, obviously everyone's going to point to Suzu, I think, as the big person coming in. But don't forget about Mirai. I think she's somebody that's really had a great run in Stardom. And basically immediately jumping in, reinvented her look. amazing talent, works well in God's eye. So doing a lot of good stuff there. You get a lot in there with her and Ami Sarai going to fight too, being in there part of the same faction. Saeeda too, back from injury, had a really strong run. I thought when she came back, I thought, whoa, she's looking great in the ring, working really strong. And she was always a very good worker. She had a run in the five-star before, but it was a little disappointing, I have to say, her first go-around. But now she's a little bit older. She's still got all the same strength that she had before. I think she's going to be somebody to watch in the tournament as well. And Julia as well, who missed a lot of the tournament last year due to injury, mm-hmm. is now going to get the chance to have a full tournament. And I really like both of the blocks. As I said, I think the new people are very good. I think they could have mixed and matched some things. And, of course, my true favorite, Koguma in Red Star's block. I cannot, forget to mention that. She's going to have a lot of great matches, too, that she did not have. And I think she's going to fill a great role in the tournament with people like her and Saki, where you could have faster-paced matches. I think that's the one thing that does help a tournament like this out for Stardom, more so than a New Japan. Yeah. You've got people in this tournament that aren't going to be wrestling 30-minute matches. They're going to be inside 10 minutes pretty much every time and doing fast-paced stuff. There's probably going to be a match where somebody gets pinned right away in like 7 seconds or something like that thrown in there. And you get a lot of different styles. You get martial arts style. You get charismatic styles like Tom Nakano, storyteller. You get power people like Saeeda, Utami, the ace, high speed. You get outsiders. You get a lot of different stuff in this tournament.
Really feels like secretly Red Stars is also the high-speed block. With Asumi, Koguma, Maika can also work the style, Tekla, of course, Saki Kashima is there with her flash pin, Saki, as you mentioned, they can all work this very flashy style. But also in the other block, there are wrestlers like Starlight Kid, Hasuki, that can also do it, Natsupoi. So yeah, they can, as you said, this tournament can be a blast because of its unique formatting, but it can also be dragging. But I think with all the talent that they have and all the versatility that they have and know from their roster, they can really make it work that they will have shorter matches while at the same time have matches that mean a lot in the end when it comes to down to the finals of the block stages, because we can always look at that, of course. But due to the fact that these blocks are so stacked, it is much harder than in comparison to G1 climaxes in years before to really look at this one match that will be the deciding match, because the block finals on October 1st, it's Red Stars. For example, we have Shuri against Risa Sera in a rematch. And then Utami Ayashishita against Koguma, Maika versus Himeka, Tam Nakano versus Saki, and Unagi Sayaka versus Tekla, as well as Asumi and Saki Kashima. So, of course, standing out there, yeah, what stands out from these matches, it's really hard. In Blue Stars block, it's a little bit more clear, I think, with the Julia versus Suzuki and Mayu Iwatani versus Starlight Kid. Those are two matches that I would look at for the decision in the block. But you can never rule out someone like Mirai, as you said. They've pushed her hard this year. She also got a shot at the white belt against Sayaka Mitani, won the tournament, the Cinderella tournament, right. So I do think they have set up a lot of talent to present an interesting tournament where, of course, in the end, it could be Julia, but it could also be anyone else, and nobody would really be disappointed by that, I guess.
Yeah, I think it'll be Julia. But I would not count out Starlight because mm-hmm. remember in Cinderella tournament, they eliminated her right away when I think a lot of people thought that she would be somebody that could go to the finals going in there. So that's something to look out for. I think it's going to come down to those two, how they want to do it. And also, they both have rivalries in that. With Julia and Suzu, obviously, with prominence and Julia and the Ice Ribbon stuff that they've called upon. And Mayu and Starlight is a long-term feud as well. Former partners and friends, and Mayu a bit of a mentor to Starlight, and now Starlight is in a Wedo tie. So they've been trying to go with this story, and that's going to be meaningful. I actually could see Starlight winning, just this being her big moment, but I also could see Julia winning. It depends on what the future is with Suzu and Prominence. It feels like they've acquitted themselves pretty well. I do think that they could have really built to something big in March between them, but they hesitated on that. It felt like they stalled a little bit, and now we're getting back into that. I feel like bringing this up, and I think we're going to see that springboard into something. So I could actually see Suzu eliminating Julia on the last night, and Starlight advancing with her big win on there. I do think that it's more likely the winner of the tournament will be for Blue Stars. Those two are my two favorites, Julia and Starlight.
Makes sense.
Yeah, in Red Stars, I think it's going to be tough when it comes to a lot of the matches. I do think that it's a good sign for Saki that she's wrestling Tom in the final night. I think that means they are going to respect her and give her a bit of love here. And we've seen it before with someone like Iroha, who was alive on the last night too last year. So you could see that there. I think Risa Sarah versus Shuri, that's a rematch. Wrestling logic tells us that Sarah will beat Shuri here. Or I could easily even see something like a dirty
double
finish.
Count out, yeah, stuff like that. Yes.
Yeah, a purposeful screw over finish where Sarah.
To eliminate Shuri from the contention without beating her.
Exactly. Like, everybody get, like, she hits her with a weapon or something on the outside and lays her out. Like, I could see something like that. Like, maybe a win for, like, she knocks the hell out of Shuri with some kind of devastating weapon and either gets a double count out or just eliminates her. It doesn't matter either way. But yeah, the whole point is just to eliminate Shuri at the end. It feels like because Shuri got her win before, usually in tournaments, they almost always will reward prior losses and even things out, and I think we can see that here, and it makes perfect sense because Shuri winning the block doesn't make a ton of sense as champion. Utami, I think, could be the favorite to win the block, but Koguma is the perfect person to have an elimination on the last night, like a very quick roll-up type of deal. I feel like that's perfect. We saw it in the Cinderella tournament too, where she eliminated Julia in a very fast-paced match. I could see something like that happening here too. So here's the thing, I predicted in the Cinderella tournament a Julia versus Tom Nakano final, and they eliminated them both pretty early. But I feel like that's the logical final here. Like, looking at that night and just everything about it, that feels right. I think Nakano has done a great job. Again, the queen of getting attention on herself online and in wrestling and everywhere, I think that she's, despite not really having a title or any kind of major role, she's been one of the main players of the company through her own work and just amazing storytelling abilities. So she feels like, it's not like she feels like some cold person, even though she hasn't been in the title mix. And Julia, you always know, is going to be up there. Starlight, though, I look at that Starlight, though. That's going to be my dark horse, I think. Or not even a dark horse, because I think most people would consider her a favorite. I could easily see Suzu eliminating Julia and Starlight going ahead, which that opens the door for other people to make the final two in the Red Stars block. But it's going to be interesting. I think Red Stars is way up in the air, and Blue Stars, it's going to come down to Starlight and Julia. So we'll see. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. This tournament's going to be really good. I know it's long, but you look at these names. Who's the weak link in this tournament?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, even somebody like...
There's no Toru Yano. There's no Chase Owens here.
Yeah, and like someone like Sayaka would probably be one of my least favorites, but she's done a good job this year in her new role as a trollish type of personality over people. And like an unofficial gatekeeper, I think, is a great role for her. She's done a great job with it and really improved as the year's gone along. And then you have a lot of young talent in Blue Stars, someone like an Ami Sarai, someone like a Hanan, the future of Stardom champion. And I think, but even then, Hanan has had a really fun run with the future Stardom title, really good in her role as the opening match person. I think this is going to be a great tournament up and down. I don't see any weak links in either of these blocks, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Maybe some matches will get a little overlong. I think too they cut the time limit off at 20 minutes. I don't know if they announced a change for that this year, because it was 15 minutes for many years, and then they changed it for 20 minutes, but it's still less than 30 minutes, so all the matches will be
I have this news site in front of me right now. All matches are 15 minutes.
Great. They moved it back to 15. That's
yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, love it. And like, that makes this tournament even more dynamic, in my opinion. And that's such a great factor to compare it to the other tournaments, the men's tournaments, because they're always capped off at 30. So I really love the idea of a 15-minute time limit.
Yes,
things up. I love it.
Especially like, with the field being much larger now. Makes complete sense.
Absolutely. Great, great call by Stardom, and just a tremendous tournament on paper. Cannot wait to watch all of this. And as usual, every single match will be covered on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, over these many months that we will...
Exactly.
We will go through this journey together.
We'll span over the entire summer, right into the fall, actually, too. Unlike G1 Climax, that is our next project, Dylan. We're going to talk about the G1 Climax matches, but also...
Hey, one more thing before we get off on Stardom. There's one more news piece I wanted to get to before we talk about G1. So there's these rumors going around that Io Shirai's contract is up in WWE, and for whatever stupid reason, she has never been on the main roster. Makes no sense whatsoever. But just last night was the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, something that they looked at that said, Io, Money in the Bank? Doesn't make any sense. But the rumors are that her contract's coming up, and all intents and purposes, all the rumors are, and we don't know, we could turn around and a day from now she's re-signed with the company. But all intents and purposes, it seems like she's probably headed her way back and following in the footsteps of Kairi. What do you think of the possibility of her?
I mean, she was more successful in NXT than, for example, Kushida was. But Kushida also returned to Japan after these 3 years that he was in the US. And I honestly expect the same for Io Shirai. Much like you said, she was successful in NXT, won the women's title, but never was given any hope to even come to the main roster. And I think that she values this as a great experience to have been in the US for a couple of years, but now it seems like that's what the rumors say, that she wants to return to Japan. And when she wants to return to Japan, there is only one company that she could really go to, and that's Stardom, and that would really boost the roster once more, with the original three being reunited. And you could easily do a story where they reunite as the originals of Stardom to then feud against the newer stars that the company has brought up.
And that could be like a year-long story.
Absolutely.
If they play their cards right. But yeah, like I said, there's many, many reasons to criticize WWE. But how she didn't end up on them, like didn't even get a showing, is one of the weirder decisions by all circumstances. Obviously, I'm sure they're hung up because her English might not be perfect or whatever. But in NXT, she wasn't just successful. She was one of the most over people for a while on that company. It's like everybody in that NXT crowd loved her. I do not understand them at all. And they had a ready-made deal with, like, you know, Asuka and Kairi and everything. Kairi leaving. They had regardless, a big mistake on their part, but... Io did have a lot of success in NXT, and she's somebody, like you said, her coming into Stardom is just a great, another boost. And she arguably was the most recognizable star of the three, of her, Kairi, and Mayu, when she was there. Quality is subjective, everybody has their favorites, but she was the one that was probably the most consistently pushed as a top star when she was there. And I think will probably mean the most to the company. Although Kairi did have that main roster run that Io didn't have. You know, it was so-so, not terrible, but not great either, I would say. And Io, she's somebody that's going to come in, be a big deal. There's going to have tons of interviews and tons of fresh matches, too. That is the great thing about this, is that she's been gone for a few years now. But, I mean, this company's been flipped on its head since she left it. You know, there's a lot of people that she's never stepped into the ring with, that she has just loads of big matches. If she so wants to, maybe she'll be like Kairi and really not want to go full-time yet. We don't know if that's will happen in the future. But Kairi not in the tournament, I think that's a little bit disappointing for me, because she's such a tremendous performer that you always want to see more of her. And the same with Io. If she wants to dip her toes in, I think they'll have a great run. And that's something to keep your eyes on, too, for all the fans out there. See what happens with Io, because I think if she does come back, that's going to be a big boost to her career, the roster. Everything about it could be awesome. And that's something, when I saw it online yesterday, I was like, oh, yes, finally. Because I was just like, man, she's riding away in this NXT bullcrap. And they've got to let her go. And now it looks like she's on her way back. So that's something I wanted to mention and throw out there for everybody.
Absolutely. Big piece of news, especially with Stardom now once again having a mysterious person that attacks Rossi Ogawa backstage.
There's mystery people all the time. That's definitely par for the course. That could be another person that Io has not wrestled. It may be Io herself, breaking contract right now, breaking the law. Ooh. But, you know, she was kind of more of a heelish figure before. She tried to be a heel, but they still kind of took to her as a babyface, you know, pretty much, even after she turned on Mayu. And the original Queen's Quest, where she had the crazy hair and, you know, stuff going on, and was a great character, but it's going to be interesting to see what she does.
Definitely. Yeah, all right. You already mentioned the Patreon, Dylan. You will be covering a lot on there, but we, as I've said it a couple of weeks ago, we will definitely be covering the G1 Climax. We will not be live after every show, but we'll definitely upload some summary type of shows with two or three G1 shows. We only have five matches per show, which makes it very easy to follow the G1 this year, I believe. And we will be doing that, but also the half-year awards. I put up a Google document onto our Eastern Lariat Twitter at Eastern Lariat. Please go there and fill out the form. And also, please see the thread about the most underrated, because I once again forgot to implement one category. Last time it was best tag team. Now it is most underrated. Who would it be, Dylan? What will it be next time at the year-end awards? What will I forget then?
MVP.
MVP, yes.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute.
Like, yes, we just end the show and just, okay, what did we forget?
Yeah, it's only the most important award there. But no, I love the awards. I absolutely love hearing everybody's opinions. And like I said, some of them I'll agree with and think you're a genius. And some of them I'll think, what? But I will respect it, though, because I love the fans and all the listeners of the Eastern Lariat. You know, we've seen some people come in here voting like Tai Chi and Tama Tonga as the best feud, which I enjoyed, actually. I have no hard feelings over that at all. I highly encourage everyone to vote, because I think the one thing that will separate our awards from, you know, any kind of other ones out there is you look at our ones last year. We are the company that will have everything. Like, we had so much Joshi representation last year, and the year-end awards, I personally think, you know, I want these to be big and all of that and have a tons of voters. I think the year-end awards will always take precedence to a lot of people over the half-year awards, but as we mentioned last week, there's educational value and fun value of the half-year awards that we can have, so please vote. Tell your friends if they're wrestling fans. And I don't care what kind of fan you are. If you're somebody who loves New Japan, that's totally cool. If you're a Joshi exclusive fan, vote. You know, let us know what you have in mind. If you're a fan of DDT, Noah, All Japan, all of the companies, like you will have, it's all positive vibes for these awards, all good stuff. And it's talking about, it's like celebration of the half year that we have so far and stuff that we can remember at the end of the year for the big awards. So everybody vote for it. These are two of my personal favorite episodes of the year, and I cannot wait to do it with you, Strick.
Absolutely agreed with that. Please vote. And this has been the Eastern Lariat. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.